Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Second hour is here from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Glad you're with us. Coming up in hour number 3 today, Withrow, if it's not already Chad up on OutKick, there will be a column up today.
It's up. Great idea.
We'll get into the name, image, likeness. And it's something that Chad teased with Park Lee. Spoiler alert, he's already told you who number one is on the NIL column that he wrote about who could benefit the most if they go full investment. It's the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Yeah, Clark Lee was your tease, in fact. That's what it was. That's why I told him.
And we will have that. We'll get into a discussion of this in his top five. That's coming up in about an hour and 15 minutes. Every Tuesday at this time, we chat with John McClain, formerly of the Houston Chronicle, but I can now say Texas Sports Hall of Famer. He's already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He is now Texas Sports Hall of Famer, John McClain, after the induction this weekend. John, congratulations. Hope all is well.
Thank you very much, guys. I think it was the greatest night of my life. It was in my hometown. There were 8 of us. It's only the second class of media in the history of our state. And I'm one of 8 writers who's in that Hall of Fame. And it was in my hometown. Everybody else was from the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex except me. So I felt like I was carrying the banner for the rest of our state. And it was a monumental event. And other than tripping over some stairs and almost taking a header, I think I pulled it off okay.
Uh-oh. You didn't hurt your arm again, did you?
No. I got to save my right arm now because I'm throwing out the first pitch of an Astros game next month. And right when my arm recovered from shooting a free throw for charity for the Rockets, now I've been throwing a baseball. It's sore all over again. But I'm determined not to bounce the ball.
John, is there an athletic event that you won't participate in that's ceremonial? The free throw you mentioned, the first pitch now, if you had to take a slap shot at a local minor league game, would you do that as well? Is there something you say no to?
Shoot a penalty shot for the Dynamo?
I'm impressed that you're saying yes to all these things.
Yeah, I haven't been on skates since the original Houston Aeros folded after the 1977 season. As I think if I fell, I wouldn't be able to get up. Maybe if the Texans asked me to kick an extra point and I could do it from the goal line, maybe I could make it. But I've been honored to do these things. If they're nice enough to ask me, then, of course, I'm going to accept because they're such an honor. Somebody told me today, I was at the Texans OTA, said, "You've won everything but an Oscar." I said, "That's next."
Speaking of that, I guess it could be next. You're back in theaters tonight in the Nolan Ryan film.
Yeah, the Nolan Ryan film's gone nationwide tonight, one day only, 7 o'clock Central. It's all over Houston, Chasing Nolan, which I was honored to be part of. And I've always thought Nolan Ryan such a fascinating character. You know, he was on a staff with Tom Seaver, Jerry Kuzman, Nolan Ryan, when the Mets were on the verge of becoming the Miracle Mets in 69, and then in the worst trades in history, the Mets sent him to the Angels for shortstop Jim Fregosi. He was a good player then, but nobody ever had any idea Nolan Ryan would be able to get the ball over the plate, become the greatest power pitcher in history with the most strikeouts, the most no-hitters. And you guys realize he never won a Cy Young Award.
It's crazy.
And the durability, I mean, and the mentality. He doesn't like talking all that much with the media, but, man, he doesn't mind discussing the toughness and the mentality that he brought and the expectation that he had to meet for his own sake in his own mind.
Have you seen it, John? How much are you in it? Do you know?
Yeah, I've seen it. They sent me a copy. I was not able to attend one of the screenings there because I couldn't get away from commitments. And they made South by Southwest a film festival in Austin, which is second biggest in the country, and got a great response. Nolan's done a few interviews tonight at one of our theaters. He's doing a live Q&A afterward. They have others that he already recorded after the South by Southwest premiere. And I was fortunate. I was stunned when they actually used some of the things I said. And it was an honor to be included, especially something about baseball. But I've been an Astros fan since their first game in 1962 and a baseball fan since 1960. They used to put the Yankees on all over the country. And like so many, I fell in love with Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris. And so I was honored, and I followed Nolan's career closely from the Mets to the Angels. And when he signed here, my goodness, it was a big deal. First million-dollar player. And then when the owner, John J. McMullen from New Jersey, nobody liked him anyway, he let him get away to the Rangers of all teams. That man was vilified like no other owner in the history of Houston. And then Nolan threw a couple more no-hitters. And it's amazing. He never struck out 20 hitters in a game, and he never won a Cy Young Award. And people are always surprised about that when you think about what an incredible power pitcher he was. And one of the things that I was impressed with, every time he pitched, and if he was pulled, he was insulted. He would ice up his arm and his shoulder, and he would get on a stationary bike in the locker room, and he would ride that thing like crazy, because he always told people the power came from his butt and his legs, and that's why he worked so hard to build them up.
John McClain with us. You can follow him on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. Yesterday, John, Jarrett Bell with the report from USA Today about Dan Snyder and an anonymous owner saying that they were discussing amongst the ownership group, owners were discussing what it might be like to get 24 of the votes that would be necessary to force Daniel Snyder out of ownership of the Washington Commanders. Meanwhile, Mark Maskey of the Washington Post today says that multiple owners have said they know nothing about this. And the quote is, if that's happening, no one has asked for my vote, one owner said. Another said, I don't think that's accurate, end quote. I take that to mean they don't want anyone snooping around their mess either. And that's why they don't want anything to do with this story.
It would be a difficult thing to do. You got to get a 3/4 majority to vote him out. He would file multiple lawsuits. It could end up in court. Dirty laundry could be aired. You saw what happened with St. Louis. They gave St. Louis almost $1 billion to walk away from that, to settle that lawsuit, because they didn't want to have to air their laundry in public. That would be in court. The NFL owners do not want to go to court. And even though Snyder is not one of the good old boys, he's not respected, he's not one of them, so to speak, you know he knows a lot of stuff that's going on in the league for these decades, because he's in those league meetings. He's in those executive sessions, and he can tell a lot of tales. So they would love for him to sell, but you can't make a guy sell. Now, Jerry Richardson, he sold before the posse caught up with him. There have been some other instances like that, but NFL owners have never tried to make some sale just because of what you said.
Well, and that's the bad news headline for the NFL right now, is what's going on with Daniel Snyder and his team and what the league could do. The good news headline, at least for fans, John, is that the NFL is considering doing away with the Pro Bowl. What do you make of this story about the Pro Bowl possibly being a bygone?
Chad, like, I got a soft spot for the Pro Bowl because I went to Hawaii 14 years in a row. Wow. And one other time with the Chronicle paying my expenses for me and my wife, Carol. So I will always have that soft spot for the Pro Bowl. And it's a great week, except for the game, because the game's awful. And I don't blame them, but they make money off of it. So they've got to find another way to make money, because the owners don't like giving up revenue, as you guys know. If you say, okay, we're going to do away with the Pro Bowl, and you think about memorabilia, there's a lot of cool stuff sold at the Pro Bowl, with hats and and shirts and every other kind of memorabilia, and then the TV rights. So they're going to have to do something to make up the money. Doesn't seem like it would be a big amount, considering how little the game means. But it's amazing to me how many people still watch it. You know, I always said to let them, there used to be a lingerie bowl. Let them play with the lingerie bowl and let them do, you know, two hands anywhere.
I was with John and Carol at the Pro Bowl 2 years in a row, and they introduced me to a coffee shop across the street from the hotel where we stayed that had these – I put on so much weight in these 2 weeks. I had this coffee cake that was like a, John, I don't know if you remember this. It was like a brick of coffee cake that had every morning that I still crave. Every time I have a piece of coffee cake, I'm like, why is this not the size of the coffee cake I had in Hawaii? All coffee cakes should be the size of that coffee cake. And they should also serve it in Indianapolis, where the Combine is going to stay in 2023 and 2024. Are you surprised the league decided to do that? And is it just to stall to allow Arlington to get its bid and SoFi to get its bid up to the levels the NFL wants?
The only people that want to move the Combine away from Indianapolis would be the league and the owners, because it would help them make money. And right now, no coach, no general manager, player, nobody wants to leave Indianapolis, and it's because it's so convenient. You know, Paul, think about you. You're flying from Nashville, or I mean, you're driving from Nashville to Indy, then you'd have to fly to LA, you'd have to fly to Dallas. It's inevitable that it's going to leave at some point. But they don't care what everybody thinks. They care about, you know, the almighty dollar. That's why it's the NFL. Now, at LA, they would have it right there in that complex with the stadium. NFL Network across the street. They got the outdoor stadium that we see all the time, indoor. Now, what they have in Frisco, which is where the Cowboys facility would be, they would have it at their outdoor practice fields. They have an indoor stadium that they use if it rains, and high schools play there on Friday nights during football season, and it seats about 15,000 people. It would be fine. There is a hospital connected. There is a hotel connected. There are restaurants. There are everything, and only people wouldn't like it would be those of us who would have to spend money on rental cars and hotels and drive a long way to get there, whereas in Indianapolis, we can just walk.
John McClain with us. Coming up, a full discussion on quarterbacks like Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield, and much more. You can follow John on Twitter, same as us. You can search us, Outkick360. John is at McClain_on_NFL. We'll get into a potential Derrick Henry extension. Well, at least there's talk of that through Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. Nick Foles to Indy. We have George Kittle, who has discussed Travis Kelce's contract and more. That's all straight ahead on Outkick 360. Outkick 360 rolls on from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Crew is all here, including John McClain, talking all the NFL headlines, plenty out there. Paul, there is a transcript, a portion of tonight's piece on HBO Real Sports involving those some of the 22 accusers in the civil case against Deshaun Watson.
Well, yeah.
And the interview with Soledad O'Brien.
It's not good. You wouldn't have expected it to be good. But
same as the details last year.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most telling thing out of this transcript is one of the women, Kyla Hayes, says that it basically says that she feels like it was a threat from Deshaun Watson, that he said, like, I know you don't want anything to happen to your career. I don't want anything to happen to my career either. No, this is Ashley Solis. He said, I know you have a career to protect, and I know you don't want anyone messing with it, just like I don't want anyone messing with mine. She said, to me, that's when I got really scared. Soledad O'Brien, who's conducting these interviews, said, why? Solis, because that sounded like a threat to me. And that does, to me, sound like threatening language. Like, you wouldn't, I know you don't want anything to happen to your career. I don't want anything to happen to my career either.
Well, and John, I saw you retweeted one of these stories, and while Deshaun Watson didn't go on record for this HBO piece, one of his attorneys did, and Soledad O'Brien asked a simple question: why should people believe your one client over 22 women claiming the same thing? Which I thought was a very good question to the attorney of Deshaun Watson. I look forward to hearing his answer on that. What do you make of what's come out so far, John?
First of all, none of this is new to us. It's in all the lawsuits. I've read those lawsuits three times, and I'm eager to see it, but it's going to be news because people around the country haven't read the lawsuits, and it's going to be big news in Cleveland. When Watson had his news conference up there, somebody asked him about the sheer numbers and why would they all be lying, and he didn't have any answer other than they were, and they are. And the fact that Tony Busby allowed them to talk to HBO, now Rusty Harden, who represents Watson, he's been doing podcasts. He did interviews with Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com, the main beat person for the Browns, because they're both back in the court of public opinion trying to influence it, when really Roger Goodell and his investigator and the league office, the only one that count. I'm still amazed, guys, that when the Browns gave him a record $230 million guaranteed, they did not get it in writing, that he would make sure these were settled by the start of camp, because they don't want the distraction going on during training camp and regular season. And if they wait, say 22 went to court, they wouldn't do that in one season. They wouldn't do that in 1 year. It could drag out over 2 or 3 years, and it would always be hanging over his head. But what's interesting is some of those allegations in the lawsuits are just unbelievable. And a lot of people say that. Why would all 22 women from 3 or 4 states tell a similar tale? Well, Watson's side would say they'd been coached by Tony Busby. Well, it wasn't like they were friends. It wasn't like they were at the same place in a strip shopping center working out of there. They didn't know each other, and so that's why it's so intriguing. And as we get closer to the start of training camp and Watson getting back on the football field, it's going to get more notoriety.
Yeah, and John, I think also it's important to note this. The NFL sat back and did nothing after reading the same lawsuits that you read and the details there that were out at this time last year prior to the start of last season, that will be in detailed from the same accusers tonight on HBO Real Sports. They did nothing because the Houston Texans didn't want to play him. The Cleveland Browns do, and there will be a same uproar that comes out of this interview, having not even seen it, that we had last year around this same time as well. Given that fact, how do you expect the NFL to act this go-around compared to 12 months ago, and what does it say that they sat back and did nothing 10 months ago with all this?
Well, remember, Watson wanted to be traded, and he said he wasn't going to play. He told him he wasn't going to play, and he laid it all out for him what he would do. Now, because the rules have changed and he was making $10.54 million, he wasn't going to lose $40,000 a day by not showing up. So he showed up first day of training camp. They wanted to trade him. They wanted to trade him by the November 2nd deadline. They couldn't take a chance that he got hurt in practice, where he blew out his knee as a rookie in 2017, doing almost nothing. And so they worked out a way to do it, but he had to come to work every day. A lot of people wonder, well, why wasn't he on the commissioner's exempt list? Well, that would have been great for him. He got paid, and he could have traveled the world, done anything he wanted. By not being on the exempt list and having to come to work every day was almost a punishment. And now, if I talk about the circus it was last year when he showed up the night before the first practice, when they were supposed to show up, and what a circus it was the next day and the rest of camp, as long as the media was allowed, I can imagine it'll be 10 or 20 fold in Cleveland, because number one, they want to play him and will play him because he got that record contract, and you think we're getting closer to a suspension. I think the Browns need to know. They need to know who their quarterback's going to be and for how long. And that's why I think that the investigator will make a recommendation. If she says I do not recommend a suspension. He can't be suspended. But if she says, okay, I think a full season, then the appeal would go to Goodell or someone who would handle it for him. And then they could say, okay, it'll be a season or we'll reduce it to half a season. But I think it's going to happen sometime in August as we approach the start of regular season.
It ends up punishing the Browns, who, well, gave him a contract that is very beneficial to Deshaun Watson. And, I mean, he still was paid $10.5 million last year. So the Texans were punished by not being able to trade him. They still paid him. And by not suspending him last year compared to this year, he's actually going to make $9 million off the suspension.
Yep.
And he got $27 million up front when he signed that contract before the 2020 season, the week before, when he was so happy he cried.
John McClain with us. Russell Wilson, John, says the return to Seattle in week one has got to be non-emotional. I don't know for his sake how that's going to be possible given the environment, the atmosphere, and how endured he was to the area and how much Seattle embraced him over the last decade.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. These players always say when they play their old teams, it's just another game. He was revered there. They'll do a tribute to him. The fans will give him a standing ovation. And, you know, the stomach will be churning like crazy. And then when the game starts, he's got to make sure to get himself under control. But there's no way, unless you're a robot, returning to a city where you went to two Super Bowls, won one, almost won another one. It cannot have an emotional impact.
What a way to kick off the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that they got it in early. It's a silly thing to say. He's got blood flowing through his veins.
Well, what he's saying is that for him, he's got to try to make it not emotional. And I don't know that he's saying that it's not going to be emotional at all. I think the point is for him to play at the level he wants to be unemotional about it. The comment I read didn't say I'm going to have no emotion about it. It said I need to make it an unemotional thing.
He said the return has got to be not impossible.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. I mean, look, that's what everyone would strive to do in that situation. But I agree, it's impossible. John, it's also impossible for A.J. Brown to not tweet, apparently, because he cancels a little kid's football camp the moment that he's traded, and then later claims, and people are complaining about that. Well, he's received threats in Nashville, so he doesn't feel safe going and doing the camp and puts a long post out about that. What do you make of this with A.J. Brown? If he wanted to not go to the camp, just don't go to the camp and put another Titans player there. I don't understand why he would come back and say this stuff about, well, now I don't feel safe with Titans fans. And, oh, by the way, he's about to play in Philly. So your thoughts, John?
Well, first of all, Jadlag, you guys know him. I don't. But I'll tell you this. If he thinks he's getting threats now from the Titans, wait and see what he gets from the Eagles fans. If something happens and he doesn't play well, or he drops a few passes, or he turns out not to be worth $25 million a year, or the offense is not as good as the fans anticipate that it will be, there is nothing like taking criticism from the Philadelphia Eagles fans, who we all know booed Santa Claus. And so it seems like common sense could have worked that out. And maybe you do it later when things die down. But it looked like he was just using an excuse.
NFL injuries are always a big deal. Up 50% on punts. Are we seeing the waning days of punt returns?
Remember that time they did that study about all the people got hurt on kickoff returns? So they did everything they could to legislate where you wouldn't get as many injuries, and they got it down, and it was not the same. And now punt returns, I'd like to see the list of how guys got hurt. Are they talking about the returner, the blockers? Are they talking about the guys charging down the field? But if indeed that becomes commonplace, they will legislate. And the next thing we know, they will have neutered the punt return as well.
Specifically in ACL and soft tissue injuries. I don't know what guys, but It'd be interesting to see how you dull down punt returns. It's different than kickoffs, that's for sure.
Well, John, if it's not concussions, are they going to dumb down any play that has more hamstring injuries?
I think a lot of those hamstring injuries, I was talking to some former Oiler players last week at an event, and they used to talk about how much they stretched all the time. They didn't lift as many weights because they didn't have sophisticated weights. They used to have like one barbell in the locker room and a few dumbbells, and players were not bulky and muscled up like they are now, but they ran a lot and they stretched a lot. And they think that guys they spend so much time in the weight room that their muscles are so tight, so they're gonna have more sprains and strains and pops.
The kickoff is easier to, kickoff returns,
yeah, right.
A bit easier.
It's the beginning of a series. A punt is in the flow of play.
That
kind of
play.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you're already in close quarters anyway, and what they don't want are the collisions as much as anything else. 50% up can all. I don't know. Was it a record low injury last year on punts, and now it's kind of evened itself out? Like. My guess is the NFL didn't release this information.
Kevin Seifert, my old colleague at ESPN, has a huge piece on it. So we'll delve more into it this week.
This is the first I've heard of injuries being up and the NFL admitting to it. Usually they're putting out the
good news.
Yes. Yeah. John, we also know, I think the three of us here agree it's good news that we're going to see the Arizona Cardinals on Hard Knocks during the regular season for the storylines that will be out there. The last in-season firing we saw not live, but on tape on Hard Knocks was Jeff Fisher with the Los Angeles Rams. He was fired during that show. Cliff Kingsbury's clearly on the hot seat in Arizona. Meanwhile, Kyler Murray wants the extension, and he's likely not going to get it until he proves more. He's not at OTAs. This is plenty of storylines that they don't have to manufacture during the regular season.
DeAndre Hopkins is missing six games because of substance abuse policy. And Kyler Murray didn't go to many OTAs last year. He likes to stay in Dallas. He works out there where he's from. Now, Cliff Kingsbury, he's the reason that Murray is there. He doesn't have anything to do with signing him $40 million a year, which he's not worth right now. I don't blame him trying to get it. Why not try to get it? If you can't get it, come back, keep your mouth shut, play your butt off, and then demand $45 million a year. But because they got a lot going on and off the field, it's going to be very interesting. I would rather see them in the training camp Hard Knocks. While they may have a lot of controversy, because when the season comes, then Murray will be there and it won't be as big a deal. The big deal, of course, will be Hopkins. And J.J. Watt, who got hurt and missed half of last season, he's always a great guy to focus on. So you know they'll be spending a lot of time watching Watt because he knows how to give them what they want.
Speaking of the training camp Hard Knocks, John, am I crazy to be actually excited about the Detroit Lions?
Yes.
Being a part of this and wanting to watch a perennial loser with an animated head coach in their training camp. This is the first Hard Knocks I've actually been excited to watch in a while, and I keep asking the question, am I crazy? Maybe I am. What do you think?
Well, I think you were crazy a long time ago, and it had nothing to do with Hard Knocks.
Very
true. I think this, I've seen every Hard Knocks there's been because I've always been fascinated by it because it takes us places I can't go. You guys can't go. And when it was here in Houston, I always worried about them getting scoops that I don't get. And there was only one thing they had that I wish I had, but it was still a look behind the scenes. And I like that. And I think Dan Campbell's going to be the star. That's his personality. I know Peter King yesterday picked him to be the 20th best team in the league, the Chargers to be second. And of all the things I saw Peter in his ranking, I would be pretty sure the Lions with Jared Goff are not going to be the 20th best team after being the second worst last season. But I do think they'll be fascinating. And because we know so little about them, there'll be some personalities that we don't know about that we'll be fascinated with them.
Prediction, Chad will not watch the third episode like he didn't last year.
Well, it won't be because of the lack of interest in the team as much as the edit.
It's going to be the edit.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I want to find the team, John, that would legitimately just say, you know what, we got nothing to hide here, but we're not breaking state secrets here. It's football.
We're the Lions.
No big deal. Come in and shoot whatever the hell you want and air all of it. We don't care. If the Detroit Lions are going to be that team, then I applaud them, and I will watch every second of every episode.
I think I believe that Rex Ryan was one of the most interesting coaches on there,
yes.
And Dan Campbell will be as interesting as Rex Ryan.
Now let's go get a GD snack.
Maybe the most least interesting coach, John, that I can remember on there was Joe Philbin of the Dolphins.
Oh,
if I had to rank the best
goodness.
Coach to the worst,
He's
it would be, I agree with you with Rex Ryan. I think Dan Campbell will be up there. Joe Philbin was the one that I remember watching and thinking, man, this guy is putting me to sleep.
Good show to go to bed to.
And I don't play in the NFL. Thank God I don't play for the Miami Dolphins.
I agree with you 100%. And if anybody knows anything about going to sleep, it's me.
As you illustrated during our show.
John, Derrick Henry, 2 years left on a contract here in Nashville, coming off injury. We went into a deep dive on this discussion yesterday, and the report, it was a note from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN for their subscription-based portion of their site, mentioned as a wild card player to watch for a contract extension before the regular season, Derrick Henry at the top of his list. It was not a list in alphabetical order, and he put Henry number one. I'm curious to get your thoughts on how surprised you'd be to see with a running back with 2 years left in contract number two in this league get a contract extension.
And a running back coming off a major injury,
right.
And a running back who's going to be toting the mail a lot again. I'm sure he would like to have one, but I think I'd wait another year before I did something like that. And I don't think he's going to break the bank with his next contract. They've taken good care of him. He's taken great care of them. But I'd be real surprised if it's done before this season.
George Kittle doing some work for Travis Kelce, not that Kelce needs it, but made the comment recently as they're preparing for tight end U, which takes place here in Nashville, their offseason training regimen. That Kelce, when you compare his money to wide receivers across the league, it's ridiculous. Of course, George Kittle is setting himself up for a great payday as well. Maybe Kelce will give him part of the signing bonus.
Well, he needs Kelce to go out there and get the big bucks, so that can be his benchmark. But those two guys are fantastic, and if you think about it, they're not true tight ends that line up on the line of scrimmage and block people. They run routes. They line up outside, they line up in the slot. You'll see them going in motion. And to me, that's more of a wide receiver, and they deserve to be paid like wide receivers. If you don't believe it, just ask their quarterbacks.
John, just a hypothetical for you, and I'm just reading between the lines here, because over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and we got into this a little bit last week, Ben Roethlisberger and the sentiment behind the scenes last year in his final season with the Steelers, and now the comments from him where he says, my coach and GM didn't want me back. They don't want me back. Is this a player that come week 9 would rejoin a team somewhere?
I don't think he might want to come back, but based on the way he played last year, I don't see it. I just don't see it. I think the Steelers are ready to play Kenny Pickett. I think maybe in other teams, you can't ever say never, but I just don't see Roethlisberger coming back and playing with another team.
It's just got the diminished skill set doesn't leave like the same.
Yeah, but yeah, you know what I think it is? I
opportunity.
Think it's May,
there.
And we didn't hear about this in December and January. Yeah, he feels fine.
Yeah.
And he's by the time October rolls around, he's going to feel excellent, the best he's ever felt.
Right. But his arm isn't strong. You know what I mean?
Well, neither was Drew Brees, but the New Orleans Saints called him, too.
Yeah, well, they were really down. They were down.
They were
East
desperate.
Book.
Yeah.
There will always be a desperate team. The Detroit Lions have Jared Goff at quarterback. There will always be a desperate team. And I'm not rooting for Roethlisberger to do it because we knew he was done. But there was no sentiment like this publicly until right now. And I find the May comments interesting compared to where we were in January. And I wonder if a team, you know, beats around the bush a little bit and says, hey, Let's see if he's interested in just coming in and finishing the season.
I think he ought to be grateful to the Steelers who kept him a year too long.
I agree with that, too.
He wouldn't go with a bad team because the bad teams know that if they're bad, they got a shot at getting a quarterback prospect and what's shaping up as a great quarterback draft. It might be more likely a team thinks it can make the playoffs, but I'd still be real surprised, him or Breeze, stick a fork in him.
Plus, a bad team's more likely to have a bad line, and he's more likely to get beat up. And so he might be feeling great in October, but he came back and be feeling like hell in November.
Well, I throw in October. I mean, it could be December.
Yeah.
Right? You could go into week 17 of and have a guy go down, and you have a playoff push coming up, and you're trying to figure out if you can just win four games. You know, I
just love the idea of him just kind of like getting his arm loose. That's the whole training camp routine. Someone picks him up, but it's like, I just got to, like an old dad, you know, okay, let's get out in the yard,
also,
kids.
A lot of guys.
Just get that shoulder loose, and he's out there ready to go.
More and more guys.
He probably could do it, though,
more and
honestly.
More guys are good at getting skinny as they leave the league, but I picture Ben as going through a fat stage first.
Well, that'll
be fair?
That will be the sign.
Ben the Bear.
If we see him publicly and he weighs another bill, then we know he's officially retired.
If I had to put my money on it, I'd say that it's not going to be a phase. I think he's just going to get – it's going to be that way, and he's going to stay that way. Like if I were going to be a gambling man, I was going to take money on who's going to gain a lot of weight post-career and keep it on Ben Roethlisberger. I'm putting money on that happening.
You know me, Chad. I was being polite.
Yeah. You're very,
very polite.
You're very polite to the fat. We've seen that over the years.
John, I'm curious, in terms of your – anticipation for a summer blockbuster outside of the film Facing Nolan, which debuts tonight. Where is Top Gun rank on your list as a movie aficionado?
It seems like it's supposed to have been out 3 years ago, and it kept getting delayed. And I'll see it. I've read some stories and reviews about it. It's been very positive. The way they handle it, got a lot of the same music, so I'm looking forward to it.
John, do you watch the show on NBC, This Is Us?
My wife does. I do not.
Okay. It concludes tonight, the series finale, and I'm a big fan of that show. So
John,
I've been reminded of that. Besides me.
I've been
John,
reminded.
Did you know that I was reading a story at ESPN about Tom Cruise's running in movies? Tom Cruise is running in 46 of his 54 films.
Why is this a
surprise? He has been clocked at over 15 miles per hour in one of his Mission Impossible movies. So Tom Cruise is the fastest actor in Hollywood history, at least on film.
Who's second?
In a movie. Well,
he's a little guy in great shape.
Yeah, they said right around the movie Collateral in the early 2000s, Jackie Joyner-Kersee broke down his running form. And you could see he was working with a professional because the hands started going flat around that time, and he looked like someone taught him to run like a track star about that point in his career. Tom Cruise claims he can run 17 miles per hour because he's typically running in suits and dress shoes in the movies, and he's not running in athletic gear.
So he's running more than any actor?
Said that he is
the best.
He has been pictured sprinting in 46 of his 54 movies.
That doesn't surprise me because he's an action guy.
Yeah.
But I want to know who's second and their number is to 17.
The first guy that comes to mind is Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan would crush him, even at this age. Like
Sprint?
Just running down a runway. I would take Jackie Chan. I'm trying to think of the other guys that would be in that same ilk, like any of those action film guys.
Daniel Craig?
I wouldn't put Daniel Craig.
Craig was a good runner.
I think
James
I would take
Bond.
Cruise. I think I would take Cruise, John. But I don't doubt that he's very fast.
I'm looking for a longer strider because he's so short. So who's a longer strider actor?
Well, they looked at they actually timed out four other different famous running scenes. Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump when he sprints. When he's running across America at one point to get away from someone, and he's running it for Alabama. Sylvester Stallone in Rocky II, running on the beach
steps
with Apollo Creed.
Okay.
Harrison Ford in Raiders of the Lost Ark, running from the giant ball
Boulder
behind him. And some actor, young actor in Get Out, that's sprinting from a car. And Tom Cruise was the fastest of those actors.
Was the second fastest closer?
Second fastest was the actor in Get Out. The next was Harrison Ford, fourth was Tom Hanks, and Sylvester Stallone was the slowest of the actors. So there you go.
You drew first blood.
John, thank you as always, and congratulations again on the epic weekend, and we will be building up to your first pitch for the Houston Astros next month.
Guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it as always, and I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
John McClain.
I'm picturing Carol with the catcher's mask and chest protector out there.
Getting him ready.
With the glove, catching his fastball.
By the way, I have the 9 movies that Tom Cruise has not run in. There's only 9 that he's not seen running in, which is pretty funny.
I'm surprised there are that many.
Yeah, 9 of his 54.
Well,
one of them is the original
love
Top Gun.
Tom Cruise.
He doesn't run in the original Top Gun. Never seen run. He's playing volleyball in it.
So he doesn't run in Tropic Thunder.
He's apparently, it starts by saying he is seen running twice in Top Gun Maverick. So there's studies on Tom Cruise running in a movie, and there's apparently some YouTube video that has a mashup of every time he's sprinting and the evolution of Tom Cruise running on film throughout his career.
And where can we read this piece?
To ESPN.
I would love a manufactured chaotic fight with Chad and someone else. I'll explain.
Okay.
And Justin Thomas
made birthday present for
Justin
you.
Thomas. He fired off at Jimbo Fisher. Of course, JT is Alabama true and true.
Jeez.
Got that for you next on Outkick 360. Chad's going for his first coaching title tonight, and I would.
In my first season as head coach.
I know, yeah.
Trying to be one for one.
Yeah. I would love.
love.
If the head coach of the Red Sox softball team and the head coach of the Rockies softball team had a spat anywhere nearly as epic where tomorrow he needs the press conference to come in and say, you know what, I wish the Rockies coach would, you know, use a 24-hour rule. And, you know, let bygones be bygones, like Justin Thomas joked with reporters about Jimbo Fisher. How amazing would it be if they had the softball rip the same way?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I promise that I would not ever take it that far with another coach, regardless of how ridiculous the coach would be behaving. At least I would hope not.
Understand your position, but it doesn't mean that the other coach can't take it the opposite way.
Well, look, frustration can make you do crazy things, right? Like if you're losing badly, you got to expect some frustration on the other side.
Yeah.
And no. I tell my coaches all the time, like, here it comes. We're up 11 runs. You know, like, we're going to start getting some, like, just don't worry about it. Just, okay, fine. We're the team that's way ahead.
Here it comes, ladies.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
We're up 11. Here we
ladies, you're going to catch a lot of hell because of your coach and what we're going to do to teams.
Because of your dominance.
Yes, because of your dominance in this league this season, you're going to catch a lot of hell.
Justin Thomas's thing was forced and not funny.
It was hilarious.
I didn't think it was funny.
I'm not sure what Jimbo Fisher's rule is, but I guess he's got to win something first before he figures out his rules. I mean, that's epic.
That's not funny.
Well, he's won a national title. That's the only complaint I would have about it. Like, we can't pretend that Jimbo Fisher hasn't won anything. He won a national title at Florida State. Now, I guess what he's saying is you beat Alabama in the regular season, but you haven't won a national title yet at your current school that he hasn't been at that long. But, look, I would understand
if it was – out of nowhere. He's asked the Alabama question and he steers –
Well, if he was talking about Lane Kiffin, it'd be funnier because Lane Kiffin hasn't won anything as a head coach. Jimbo Fisher has won it all.
What he's referring to, though, is the supposed dominance of Texas A&M dominating recruiting and them being defensive. Like, we haven't bought anything. We haven't bought a title.
Well, also,
you haven't won one.
Nick
there.
Saban's right. Hardly the only guy with a 24-hour rule, and he didn't invent it.
Look at Paul defending a man named Jimbo.
I just didn't think it was funny at all.
Coming up, we get into the headlines of the day, and it includes Josh Donaldson, who's appealing his suspension in Major League Baseball. That and more straight ahead on Outkick 360.